Hello. Welcome to Comedy Potpourri. This is part three for UFO aliens, and I'm Paul.
I'm Alan.
And we're still talking about aliens and abductions, sightings, just...
It's a huge rabbit hole. What can I say?
It's more like a lizard hole.
Oh, Jesus.
So what we're doing is we're looking at all the different things, and there has been new activity we're looking at. There's a new book out.
Yes. Just recently, there was another gentleman that has come from the intelligence side of things from the government, a gentleman by the name of Lou Elizondo, who is working for a group called ATIP, I think is the last organization.
ASWEP. ASWEP.
I think that's the way it's spelled.
Yeah. But then ATIP.
And ATIP. And then he got recruited into Academy to the Stars or something along those lines by Tom DeLong.
Yeah.
And so this gentleman who's put out a book, he's been on a couple of predominant sites. He's been on Something Nation. I forget the name of it right off the top of my head.
Oh, News Nation.
News Nation with a Ross Coldheart.
Right. He's been on. I think he was on like not 60 Minutes.
Actually, he was on 60 Minutes.
He was on 60 Minutes, but he's also on the morning shows too.
Yeah, he was on the CBS morning show doing just a snippet. I only saw a bit of it. They only had like about 10 minutes on that one, but. Whatever, but Elizondo is definitely a person that seems to have been the fulcrum from the 2017 article in the New York Times, which kind of blew open the lid on a bunch of this stuff, and then it was backed up by David Grush and his reveal, along with Commander Dave Favor, who's the pilot on the USS Nimitz.
Right, right. And, Grush was in charge of a department that actually handled a lot of that.
Yeah, he was dealing with a lot of the departmental information that was being handled to ATIP or Arrow.
Arrow, I think it was, yeah.
There's a lot of complicated stuff because Washington, D.C. is kind of complicated. Just going to say that outright. I've got to deal with the feds here anyway, just dealing with some crazy bonds. But that's a whole different story all by itself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's the problem is most government agencies, even if they're a specialty, don't talk to each other. They do not share information. For the UFO or UAP phenomenon, what happens is a lot of these don't talk to each other, which I think is totally stupid. We talked about this before.
It is really stupid, but in a way, it also is an interesting way that one department can't hugely influence another. So if you're involved in, say, reverse engineering just the power source of said vehicle,
right,
that has come into your
lap.
Here you go. Ooh, that's really heavy. You know, ooh, smooth. Oh, sorry. But the idea is that you have these individual departments investigated in certain aspects of it. So, like, you could have one department involved in the biological aspect of dealing with whatever bodies you've come across.
Right.
Which was some interesting reading.
Well, if you follow Bob Dart, his was more into the ships and not the aliens themselves. He was brought
in as a specialist to work on the propulsion units I think what he called the sports model, I think is one of the terms that they called one of the saucers that they have.
Yeah.
And I always thought that sports model. Wow.
Well, they're different sizes, which is very interesting.
But it also leads to the reason why the ships are so vastly different from one another. It's not a uniform kind of design because it gets into who's piloting them?
What species is piloting them?
Let's say intelligences.
Intelligences, yes.
I think is a better idea because to me, when you start talking about species, it's like you're trying to equate, like I'm an ant and I'm trying to equate like what this giant is above me.
Yes.
It's not a species. It's an intelligence. And I think that would be a better way of them actually phrasing it. But I think the term intelligence denotes that, like, it's smarter than you are. And I think there's some people who are really resistant to that concept.
They are resistant because, okay, there's some people who believe that we are the only people in the universe.
That's right. There's some fundamentalists out there. I'm letting you know. You're on notice, pal.
And what would... Okay, I know people are going, how dare you say this?
Please.
What would happen if Christ was an alien?
Oh, God.
Oh, no, think about
now,
it.
Now, again, you would undermine the fundamental driving force for humanity literally for about the last 4,000 years or so up until this, given this rough.
Well, he's missing out of the funeral cave, right?
Right, okay.
And then he comes back down and visits.
True. There's something to be said about that. I mean, well, you can just talk about the book of Ezekiel and his that was almost extricated from the Bible, from what
right.
I understand,
right.
as an apocryphal chapter in the Bible.
Because
yes. there's like, I think, 6 or 7 things. I haven't read up on my theology stuff, so I'm definitely no expert. But I believe that there's about 6 or 7 different apocryphal chapters of the Bible that have been taken out of the King James Version, but they're still apocryphal. They're still written by prophets.
Right.
But...
Well, imagine that. They, you know, some Bibles don't have Thomas in them.
Well,
in
yeah.
In case you people don't understand, that's where Doubting Thomas came from, was St. Thomas. He doubted that it was Christ when he came back.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he says here, you know, and actually had him put his hand in his wound and touched him, and he finally, like, yeah. And so I'm going to go to a little bit further than this.
Okay.
Some of the, I'm going to call them ufologists because that's UFO. Alienologists, I don't know what you want to call them. Some people call them crypto, which I don't, it doesn't fit me.
I don't dig that one. That's like when you're, again, we're talking about the differences between species and intelligence.
Right, right. Right. So what happened is some of these people believe that some of the aliens that have come here are on a spiritual journey here.
Okay, now I've heard something along those lines. In somewhat what my ex-girlfriend used to refer to as woo-woo. Okay.
Woo-woo!
Woo-woo!
Okay.
Here comes the train. It's coming to the station, baby.
Now, Chuck, I have a friend, Chuck, who does that. He goes, woo, woo.
But a lot of people who get into the metaphysics, if you want to get into that, and spirituality, and I'm not knocking them, because in most cases, there is definitely something behind it. But I think it's the way that some people portray themselves as that I have kind of a hard time
right.
buying. And so with the spiritualists, some of them believe that we are souls that have actually made the decision to come to Earth to experience all of the ambiance that is being an Earthling, I guess, because apparently this is definitely a I guess we're a proving ground of some kind for souls to move on and then join the greater whole when we decide to leave.
Right, right. Yeah.
And that's what, you know, the idea of reincarnation comes into play. Because sometimes some souls is like, you know, I didn't quite get it right.
Yeah,
I missed
reincarnation.
So
now we got to this point. We talked about this off air one time. There's also a theory that their souls are caught.
Oh, yeah.
But not eaten. We talked about eating. Are caught. No, and they're caught, and when the hybrids that they make
yes.
have no soul, and their souls are implanted into these hybrids. And one of the things, important things is to know that soul, this is what they were saying, and I kind of believe this, souls cannot be destroyed.
No. No, That divine spark, that's, I guess, what I would call it sometimes, the driving force that makes you, you.
Right.
Okay. It's not the facade of Paul, though I love Paul.
Oh, but, thank you.
I'm glad you're here, too. As long as that bright light doesn't come by, I'm happy.
But the thing is that the divine spark that drives people to do things is, you know, it's in every single one of us. We have these groups of people that we come in contact with that are either supposed to be helpers along the way. We help them. It kind of goes back and forth. Some souls you'll come in contact with it, or teachers. That's the best way I can describe it. Teachers that you need to learn a specific.
Right.
Sometimes those lessons are really hard. They may be in the form of your significant other or something like that, or that significant other has done something horrendous in your opinion, but it's a learning in a step.
I mean, we've and read a lot of different things that's going on. So one of them said that there's a species that actually has an aura, and that's what they thought people would thought were angels, that when they came down, their bright light around them, they actually glow, and they thought that, oh, you know, they're angels, and they pretty much look like us, kind of like the Nordics.
Okay, yeah,
kind of like that.
So you know, in
Nordics are a type of alien that actually are blonde, blue-eyed, and like over six feet tall.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard about those particular aliens. So when I was a kid, and I had heard about ufology, I think is the popular term for all things UAP,
right?
Which is unidentified anomalous phenomena, because that covers both USOs, which
yes.
are like unidentified submerged objects, I believe. It also covers UFOs, which is unidentified flying objects. And I think the reason why is because a lot of these vehicles or sightings shows a ship of some kind or probe that is able to do what they call a transmedium maneuver.
He said probe.
I did. Probe this.
The aliens really like probes.
Yeah, we'll get into that, because there's some creepy stuff about those little things. Anyway, so transmedium things, so they could actually travel from one point to another and traverse going through solid rock.
Right.
Like, with I remember watching one scene in particular. I just happened to watch the Skinwalker Ranch scenario.
They actually have to go through there.
And they actually show it going in through one side of the mesa and popping out of the other.
Buckaroo Banzai!
Oh, what was that? Across the fifth dimension or
across
something?
Across the fifth dimension. You know what?
What?
When you're there, you are.
Oh my God. It's been such a long time since I watched that movie. Oh. Oh, yeah.
And it had aliens.
Oh, it did. It did.
Lizardo.
Played by John Lithgow.
Yes.
Lizardo by Lithgow.
It's Boutte.
John Boutte.
Big booty. No, it's Boutte.
Christopher Lloyd's in that too, yeah. Man. God.
Anyway, we're back to. We have to laugh because.
Some of the topic, it's pretty heavy and pretty deep in a lot of ways, big time. So, yeah, we're talking, you know, we're talking about the idea of the soul and so on like that and the spirituality and you know, vibrationally, you're raising your spirit or your energy to a higher plane. And
right.
then you're able to interact with some of these beings that probably exist in the same space, but slightly vibrationally different from one another.
Well, what they said is like they and them that, you know, have all the information.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Certain people give off certain vibrations in their brain, and they may be more telepathic than others. They don't know it. And that's why these aliens pick them up. Other than the maybe they want a bodily inspect people, but a lot of them, when they can talk to them telepathically and stuff, it's these people that have that ability.
Now, funny enough, as I was reading on, so a lot of the people that were part of the remote viewing for Project Stargate.
Yes.
Okay. They have this part of the brain. I forget the name of it. It's actually put in the book. It's a small part of the brain that's allows them to intuit certain things, intuition in particular, making great jumps based upon the limited amount of information that they're able to have. Intuition is a big part of this little scenario. So when they give the remote viewers numbers to focus on, they will start writing down and intuiting different things. And they say that this ability is part of the brain. And they had said that some people with highly autistic capabilities is that this part is enlarged in some places.
Right.
A guy by the name of Gary Nolan, a professor, had actually been doing mapping using certain machines to show this part of the brain.
It's like right in the middle.
It's
really, where the stem
deep in
deep down, and like where the stem ends or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that. That's very interesting.
And, well, the other thing, too, is that they mentioned that this also seems to be, there might be some correlation with people's bloodline.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of that. Mm-hmm.
These people also have, like, very high IQs.
Very high IQ. Now, they went through DNA. For some reason, some people have a very different DNA blood type than anybody else. Not unique to, let's say, the human race.
So you're saying other than like A and B, B negative, A positive, type O negative, or
they
whatever.
They found a different kind of a blood type with a DNA, different with a different DNA marker.
Okay.
And they said they can't explain some of it.
It's a virus.
Well, they could be hybrids.
Well, as I was reading, recently, that there's the idea that we've been seeded. Now, you would take your standard
talk for yourself.
I'll talk about this primate right here. That the mankind decided to make their change from being up in the trees to an upright primate.
Right.
Was it 10? Thousand
longer than that
or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea is that viruses from outside of the solar system, possibly what they call panspermia, I think is the term, that delivers a certain amount of like RNA and delivers it into the general populace, somehow allowing that species to incorporate it into itself and continue to keep evolving. You know, the death of a species, an actual species, could be directed by an intelligent greater than ours from outside and biologically reorganizing. Now, our lifespan is limited. We're like ants.
Okay. If you were to wipe out just a species on Earth and deliver a virus or whatever, you know, seeding the Earth, how would you do that?
Comet, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because, like, okay, well, look at the meteorite that fell over Chelyabinsk, Russia.
Yeah.
Just recently. That was a huge explosion. But imagine something coming into the atmosphere, exploding, and with that, you're dispersing all this biological material that gets caught in the clouds and is seeded.
Right.
Now, I keep thinking of the scene out of like an Invasion from the Body Snatchers or something like that, right? The rain comes down and starts making pod people.
I'm just thinking also of one where the aliens are sending comets to blow up the Earth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a number of different scenarios, and the invasion one we'll get into a little bit later, because that actually did come up in some.
So we're gonna start talking. You know, there's so many different alien species that I said that are out there. So the major ones we're talking about are the Greys, the reptilians, the Dracos.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, your Nordics.
The Nordics.
There's a group of I think we'd already mentioned the mantids, I think, is the one that I've come across, which is a really bizarre.
And they said one there's called a rot, and it's more of like a creature. It's kind of like, I have it right here. Let me it's elongated visual, attracts appearing in photos and videos. Oh, rods or skyfish. So basically what it is I think it's your orbs.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's orbs. And then there's they have these down as aliens. Mothman.
Yep. Okay.
Jersey Devil. Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, okay. So now they're incorporating the cryptids.
Loveland Frogman.
No. Harry Buddy. Harry Buddy. We're gonna throw him in there.
Okay. This is a small greenish silver humanoids, okay? They call them the Hopkinsville Goblin.
Oh, I've seen pictures of that.
I'm sorry, but that'd be funny. So there is hybrids of these with, and that's what I understand is, especially the reptilians, they've actually, something that I was watching said that basically the reptilians, there are nice reptilians, they're actually here to help, and there's bad reptilians, which are here to take over. Yep. They want to take over everything.
I've heard of another race called the Lyrans. I've heard of some aliens coming from Arcturus. Palladians.
Yes.
The Palladians. I've heard a lot from the Billy Meyer introduction of that back in the mid-60s in Switzerland or something like that. These photos that were taken that, unfortunately, sometimes having one event leads to a person to make things up later on to make their story more special, as opposed to just saying, I saw something in the sky. Actually, you know, that'd be an interesting book. It's just a person just having an experience, seeing something in the sky, and that's it.
Okay, now we're going to get to this other point that I want to get across. Okay. One of the things that it was Leslie Keene. Pine? Anyway, she's a reporter.
Okay.
And she wrote this book. And it has to do with all reports of UFOs. And a lot of it has to do with airline.
Oh.
And what one government agent wanted to do is make sure that they would have stuff on the airlines so when a UFO is reported, it could be marked, whatever. It could be, you know, taken seriously. The problem is right now in the United States and in some countries, the pilots will not say that they've seen something because they're ridiculed.
Constantly. It's something that's been in place for literally like over easily probably 70 years would be my guess.
There's such a push-pull that some people, yes, and then what happens is mostly the government go into, you know, because they're federally subsidized. Hey, you know,
Governments don't want to come across as being weak or being perceived as weak because they can't control their own airspace. I think that was one of the reasons why there's such a distancing.
Well, I don't want to scare anybody, but this is what's in these things. They've actually created crashes. So they come straight towards a airplane. They can invert really quick. So what happens is that the pilot will overreact something and the plane goes down. It's like playing chicken, you know, with a spacecraft.
Well, that's exactly it. I think that's the reason why the military, specifically the Navy, has been a lot more forthcoming with this little thing, because they're out making determinations, whereas I think the idea is that the Air Force is more of a landlocked organization, but they have no control over the skies. And it's just like, you guys had the perfect control over the situation of the skies during 9/11. I can tell you that right off the top. If anybody was around during that time frame, if you looked up, there was nothing.
There's nothing out there.
Nothing.
Except a plane going back to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. You had a couple military planes constantly flying over just to make sure that the airspace was not being invaded by anything. So that alone is kind of, and there's some, you know, and of course the U.S. Air Force just got thrown in their backyard, right? And how does Space Force figure into this? You know,
I figured this. There's Space Force, right? 35 years ago, when I was in the reserve here, they changed it from Strategic Air Command to Strategic Space.
Oh yeah, that's right. They did change that.
Yeah, and now they have the new one, which is, you know, Space Force,
mm-hmm.
which is.
It's a derivative of the U.S. Air Force. And the thing is that the Air Force itself had been working in tandem with a lot of stuff for NASA for a long time. And NASA's always been tight-lipped about anything that comes up. But if you take a look at any of the STS videos and documentations for that and the ISS up above, there was some anomalous stuff flying around. And we're not talking about space junk. There's a bunch of other things flying around up there.
Apollo 1 through 11. There's a movie about a little documentary. Apollo 1 through 11. They actually, those astronauts actually saw anomalies on the moon.
True. Even some of the Gemini astronauts, yeah. As a test for pilots later on for the Apollo missions and so on like that. Gemini had come across a couple of anomalous things as well. Dr. Edgar Mitchell,
yeah.
One of the astronauts Mitchell. That went to the moon. Okay, he funny enough, he was actually in Roswell as a kid when all that stuff went down. So I thought that's kind of a nice little interesting tidbit to know about.
Well, you're going to come work for us.
Yeah, exactly. And then later on, he's got his own documentation, and he says, they're out there.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Yeah. But a lot of the astronauts will tell you that they're out there. Unfortunately, they're doing it now when they're retired, and they're like, you know, they don't have much to go.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
And so that's what's happening, because they were signed to secrecy. They couldn't say anything. Plus, people would think, they're nuts. They got space sickness.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it's just like, so you wait until this last minute to tell me something? Well, there's no repercussions once I'm dead. Dead silence. There's crickets.
So what happens, too, is a lot of these whistleblowers that come out, Gear,
David Grush?
Grush. Louis
Elizondo.
Elizondo.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other ones that come out. They're scared. They're not being like, okay, I'm coming out because we want to do this and nothing's going to happen. There's some, they know there might be repercussions or something going on.
And it's not repercussions from the visitors from outside. They're dealing with the internal stuff that they constantly run into problems with the people up above who don't want this information out there. They don't want the general public to have information about any of it whatsoever. And it's like, that's ridiculous. The population would completely, I think, in most cases, accept the fact that we are not alone. That's been one of those biggest terms I've been throwing around for like the last 40 years, as far as I've been around, you know, since Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out. And popularized stuff like those movies, where Spielberg actually talked to Jacques Vallée, that French researcher, who was heavily and being brought into this to give information to, and along with J. Allen Hynek, the guy who worked for Blue Book, who totally flipped the other side of it because he had to. He's like, you're asking me to discredit every single one of these people because of a mandate from up above to go on and say, yeah, that's swamp gas. No, he's not buying it, and he knows the American public ain't buying it, and he doesn't want to do them any disservice. So he became the biggest proponent, along with Jacques Vallée, back in the late 60s and early 70s to start pushing this forward. Now, you get a bunch of the other fringe researchers out there that start pulling in ancient history, like Von Daniken.
Yes.
Eric Von Daniken.
Yeah,
about
Charity
the ancient, ancient astronauts and so on like that. It's like, in context, it's good to know that you have that, but when one person starts pushing a huge amount of stuff about them coming back and coming back on this planet X or something like that with giant gods mining for gold and having like humans being genetically engineered.
Oh, who's that?
The Abenaki.
Abenaki.
You be knocking?
Abenaki.
Oh,
yeah. I was just thinking about the swamp gas.
Get your side for the swamp gas now.
Well, I was thinking it has to be a big swamp ass to have that. It was called methane.
Ooh.
Remember, they blamed it on methane gas.
And that's the reason why they took the cows? Because they were producing. Yeah, exactly. So, many, many whistleblowers have come forward. Good on you. But unfortunately, anybody who's associated with the intelligence agencies out there, there's other guys that were actually working against ufology. Doty, James Doty, I think is his name, was working for the CIA. He actually made one guy go absolutely bonkers by feeding him false information about him picking up signals from outside of the solar system. And he made this guy go fucking nuts.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would I ever want to believe this guy?
Well,
it doesn't make
sense. They put out false information.
Exactly. And that's where I have a problem, because when, like a lot of people says, when you have somebody coming from the intelligence departments, is it how much can you believe and how much is, you know, how much is credible? I mean, really, it's like, because are they just fostering more stuff to muddy up the waters and stuff like that? Now, from the reviews of what I've read so far in Elizondo's book and his interviews with Ross Coulthart and stuff like that, makes it barely believable to me. But there's always that one aspect of me that says, just like with Grush, okay, he's a military officer, has done counterintelligence. Are these guys plants? And I have to play my own devil's advocate.
Okay, well, in the UFO.
Oh, to the stars?
To the stars, right?
Okay, so
A lot of those people that belong to that do not, but are very skeptical of anybody from the government coming in.
Well, and you had the, was it Secretary or Subsecretary of Defense named Christopher Mellon, I believe?
Yes.
And
He switched.
So,
Hope, from the British. I mean, he was head of
Nick,
that.
Nick Pope?
Yeah, Pope. And he was like saying, no, 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 no. And then finally he said, oh, I can't do this anymore. Yeah, they are here. This is what we see. And the government does not think he's bad or anything. They actually encourage him in the British government. He's not like stifled.
No.
He's totally said, okay.
He worked really closely with Colin Andrews. Initially, when I was doing a lot of the research on the crop circle stuff, Colin Andrews
is a total different subject too.
Oh yeah, I know, right? He actually had gotten a lot of confirmation for working and trying to track down these crop circles that were taking place outside of Stonehenge, where there's a lot of ley lines, which are natural occurring areas of energy nodes coming
right.
together. The reason why that there's a lot of crop circles and the intensity and the just the sheer, I don't know, sheer awesomeness. I mean, seriously, because if you take a look at some of those designs that have been put into
their math, they figure out they're mathematical.
There's one that actually answers a particular thing that Carl Sagan and the guy who fathered the Drake equation, his last name is Drake, but I can't remember his first name, put out as a signal. And they got its answer back. There was this crop circle that actually shows an alien gray's face, and it's like, don't believe them. That's what was decoded in
the
visit. Oh, really? Yeah, it says, don't believe them.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, okay. Okay. I mean, like, if I'm getting a message that's been decoded and is put into a binary code, which was actually red, that's what it says. And there's a picture of a side of a gray's face in this wheat field.
Well, and talking about those, they go back. People think, oh, they just happened, you know, the like last 50 years. They've actually gone back several hundred.
They've
years.
Been recorded.
Actually, in some of the in Europe, they've actually copied them down and saw what they look like and stuff. So it's not something that's just brand new.
No,
it's been happening.
I think the best one is like the devil's mower or something like that. Did you ever see the picture? It shows like a little horned devil walking around with like some sort of a little mower. And this was done back in like 7 or 16 something or other.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, come on. Come on. That's hilarious. I mean, that's a great image to take a look at, but it puts in perspective that there have been signs of all kinds for the longest time. You know, these guys have been here for a long time. They're checking on their crop. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that people understand. They think, again, unless you've really read up on a lot of this stuff, there's been sightings of UFOs, everything, way before Christ. We're talking way before. Even the Egyptians have stuff down. The Mayans, the, you know, all that.
Take a look at the Indian stuff down south in New Mexico for the Anasazi.
Oh, the aliens? Yeah.
The butt or the ant people.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and you listen to these oral traditions that are being told by elders of tribes that talk about these people coming up from beneath the surface of the ground. Coming up. I mean, they talk about the Egyptians had their scarab-headed god.
Well, then they had the snake god. They had the alligator god. They had, which is, hey, lizard.
Well, they got that. Actually, there's quite a few of those, actually. And then you have your cat-headed ones, like Bast or Basset and Sekhmet.
Now, one of the aliens that they had, I'm trying to think of which one it is, extended, okay, if you look at the aliens, extended forehead and cranium.
Oh, the elongation?
Elongation, right? And that's what they said that some of these pharaohs had.
There's that. They also have in Peru, in
right.
where the Inca and the so you have Aztecs, the Incas, there was
Mayans.
There's another one.
Peruvians. There's a Peruvian.
Yeah, there's one where they forced their children
right.
as they're born to have these elongated heads.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, of course, they...
Why?
Because they had been visited by somebody from
yes.
outside.
Yes. That's exactly... I think exactly that's what it is. Boy, we're...
Yeah, getting way off.
We're going off on everything, but we're just like... All this information...
So,
we talked about the different aliens. Some are good, some are bad.
Yeah.
Some you don't want to get probed by, and some you do. And there is different sexes of the aliens.
I just wanted to make a break here for just a sec to talk about Alien Lou. In case you're ever coming across and you're feeling that you're needing to be probed by your friendly gray, use alien lube because it's the best way to go. One way.
Okay.
And for all of you that like probes, there's alien probes. Yes, alien probes. They're different sizes, different shapes, and they even have scales.
So we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
Unfortunately.
Where do you want to go from here? I mean,
well, I think the interesting about this particular book.
We're talking about intimate.
It gives some interesting ideas about the idea of how these ships are propelled. And it's a very simple thing, actually, and Bob Lazar actually even talked about it. So you have a small energy mass, because if you were to use something like a gravity of a black hole, we'd be in intimate danger every time a UFO popped out.
Right.
So the only way that you can control it is either by gravity or by having a huge amount of energy. And these ships have a small unit of energy, and it interacts with the surface of the ship itself, therefore allowing the ship to be able to move one way or the other very quickly. There's mention of protective bubbles, or a halo effect, if you will, which a lot of ships and or entities, it could be just a suit for all I know. Kind of like if you saw the movie Fire in the Sky, where it talks about Travis Walton.
Right.
There's a scene, whether it actually takes place or not, in Walton's account, because you know how Hollywood likes to make...
No, they don't do that. No. Oh,
they totally do. Totally. So there might be an actual
just
suit.
The movie for me.
I didn't do nothing. A suit may be formed out of this particular metal, and that's why you have these glowing creatures pop out of nowhere, you know.
Well, one of the other things I heard too is like with that power core, that they can actually have magnets on the outside and changes they're basically, I don't know if it's magnets, but they anti-gravity. And so when they go from point A to point B without hitting everything, it creates they can extend it out. So basically nothing's in front of it. And that's how they can actually go from point A without being crashed or anything.
Well, going for like 60 miles in a second without any disruption on the interior of the ship.
Right.
It'd be like, okay, for you Star Trek nerds. So they have an internal damper when they go to warp to keep everybody upright. Because if you were to go to warp speed in a spaceship and you didn't have some sort of internal dampener, you'd be jelly against the back of the ship.
Right.
Okay. Virtually vaporized right off the top. And actually, if you, the expansion actually shows something like that in one scene in particular where guy's trying to go super fast through a ring and he turns into jelly. It was kind of gross.
So Lou actually has saw a lot of this. I want to say something about the guy that used to own Skinwalker Ranch.
Okay. Robert Bigelow.
Bigelow. He has a space, I don't want to call it Bigelow Industries, whatever. He actually is reverse engineering a lot of stuff. The government actually gave him, there was several Republicans and Democrats got together and said it was important enough for him to have the money and to look into things. And he has. And he has created a lot of things from there for the government. To think that we don't have something that flies, I'm sure we do.
But this all falls back under that departmentalization of the way things are divvied out by the government to different private industries. There was mention that even somebody like Monsanto might be dealing with the biological agents. And they were just bought out by Bayer. So Bayer Aspirin might have some special little probes for you.
Along with new lube.
New lube. Just for you. Is this lube for you? Anyway, so there was There was a couple of interesting things that were mentioned in here, and it talked about what was talked about was five observables by any agency. They were always talking about.
So we're going to keep on going here. All of a sudden, my computer just turned off by itself.
Everything went down.
Yes.
I was just getting into a good spot.
Monitors, everything went down. It's oh, crap.
I told you they're listening, dude.
I'm not
that special. Come on.
I'm going to look for those dark cars coming up to the house.
Oh, I know,
house.
Right? Oh, I'm going to be looking behind me when I'm riding my bike. Probably try to jack or something. Okay, so agencies have, get back to it here, have five what they call observables. Instantaneous acceleration, hypersonic velocity, low observability, transmedium travel, and anti-gravity. And they talk about this, actually, at length, which I'm not even going to try to attempt to talk about the physics of some of this stuff, because if you read it, it makes sense, but trying to regurgitate it verbatim would be like, I'm a mouse, and just show me the cheese. I mean, seriously.
Well, I was reading an article, just real quick, is that most people, like when we talk about quantum mechanics, we can't understand it. And so basically you have to take slowly. Like, how do you eat an elephant?
Oh,
one bite at a time. That's exactly.
So the question is, why? What are we? Are we a gas station for people? Are we just an intergalactic Exxon gas station?
It's a good question. What are we? I mean, they're observing us. There's things saying that we're, I've heard that we're food.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
I've heard that we're food. I heard that we're, they're probing us. In order to find out biologically what they can do or what we can do, you know, if we're ready for space or something like that. But they're also looking to make hybrids. And some of these, when they've abducted people, they've actually showed them young children that are hybrids.
Oh, yeah, because they want to have some sort of connection to what their part of their progeny is going to look like or something
like
that.
Right, yeah.
I've heard that the intergalactic gas station was an interesting thing, actually, that was mentioned, because one of the biggest things that makes up the world for part of its mass is its water. Water is composed of two basic atoms that can be broken pretty easily, and we've actually done it for centuries. It's called steam. And so when you break that off, you can separate the oxygen from the hydrogen. And the hydrogen is actually a very plentiful element. Probably not just here on Earth, obviously out in space and in these huge clouds and stuff like that. But you've got a concentration of it being held in one spot.
Right.
So water is one of those pertinent things. Now, of course, I haven't heard anybody going to Europa to break up the deep ice that they have there on that planet.
Oh, and here's just, we're talking about name.
Or moon, I should say.
Really quick. They talk about, you know, everybody says, oh, they're from Mars, Venus, and everything. No, they're not. Okay?
No.
If they did, they stopped there and did something and have a little outpost or whatever. They're not from there. So a lot of these people that I would trust would say, there's actually one viewer, what they call a viewer, that mentally looks, and he said that he saw that they could not tell where they came from, but they're coming to Earth from far away. And just to let you know, the viewers, government had one where they were going down into the Draconian 52, in Area 52.
Okay, yeah.
And basically, he had to get out of there because they could see.
They could see him.
They could actually see him when he was projecting himself.
I'd also heard that there was a remote viewer during the time that Stargate was in. Indigo Swan or something like that, I think, is the guy's name. Top remote viewer. Supposedly projected himself to the moon. But he went there and actually had seen some beings on the moon. And they saw him.
Right.
And he pulled himself out of that right away. So the thing is that a lot of the remote viewers have what they call hitchhikers, which I just found out about. Now, I didn't know about this. But the moment it, you start to open up that third eye, if you believe in that, for the perineal gland and stuff like that, and you're able to perceive these other abilities or different dimensions and stuff like that, if you can see them, they can see you. So you're opening yourself up to a bunch of stuff that your tiny little primate brain ain't ready for, man. I'm not trying to downplay the idea of humanity. I think we have a great potential, but I think the problem that we run into is that we just like to war against each other all the time.
Yes, and that was one of the things the aliens are looking at. And, you know, some aliens want us to destroy ourselves. Others want to stop us from doing it because they see some kind of hope for us or something, because we're another humanoids. And they see that as something they want to save. Others like, go for it, buddy. We got the Earth then.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Oh, the scab. Yeah, we'll pick up the scavengers there for you. You know, human food.
Right.
Right.
Lady fingers.
But, I mean, there's so many variations of either benign or intentionally is, I think one of the things I've found really interesting is like, well, if they're here to help us, they're not doing a really good job at it. It's like, do they have their own version? I mean, is this where the idea of the Prime Directive came from? That of non-interference?
It could be. They could be seized. Okay. I have faith in him spiritual. I think this could be one of the options, and this weird. They're waiting for the second coming, and they want to see what's going to happen. Ooh, think of that.
Okay, so if there was an opening, and suddenly the government finally reveals the fact that there are aliens here, what do you think the general populace is going to do? I'm just
a lot of people. Okay, I'd say half the population would go nuts. I mean, I'm being honestly, there'd be people out there with guns going out to the forest. I'm going to shoot me an alien type of thing. And the other ones are going to be like 4th of July on top of the building. Come on down.
I can't see that. I maybe it's just because of the, I have an internal optimism that I think humans are better than that. I think if they're not threatened, they're not going to just go after somebody. Yes, there are some of those people who are a little hard-nosed because it's something they don't understand. But if they're government, and trust me, there are a lot of guys who are like, I'm all for it, I got my right to hold on my gun. Yeah. It's like, well, that's good on you, buddy, but the government saying got aliens out there.
Well, that's fine, I got my gun.
Well, good, you got your gun, right on. But the fact is, now they know.
Yeah, now they know.
Now they know. I think, and that's the thing, it's just like, I think that whole Belgium wave back in the 80s and 90s proved that the whole populace can come together and recognize that there's this stuff going on. Mexico does it. A lot of other countries around the world, both free world and otherwise, agree that there is something else out there. Why are we the last ones to do it? Because of big business is wanting to control everything that we got there. It's not saying big business isn't going to control stuff. They're going to do that no matter what. The fact is that now we as a species so, understand that there's an outside intelligence.
So people need to understand this, is that Russia has their own reverse engineering. They have ships because they used to shoot them down.
Yeah, and look how good that worked out for them too, man. Because, I mean, seriously, they're the only group of people. I have never heard of Chinese going after anybody.
No.
Only the Russians did during this, when the time the Soviet Union was there. Stalin wanted that technology because he knew the United States had it. And this is at the top of the Cold War. As far as it was getting hotter by the second, and I think the hottest it ever got was when Khrushchev was the Soviet premier.
In Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba.
Yeah. That's because he wanted some of them cigars. You know what would be really cool?
He wanted the drink.
I would love to get one of those cars from Havana.
Oh, the old ones?
Dude, those 50s cars are fucking rock.
Well, they said, you know, it's so bad there, they can't get parts, that they're scavenging and they're making their own parts for those cars.
And they run phenomenal.
Yes, they do.
Get on them. I would love to get one of those, but I wouldn't know how to keep it going, unfortunately. Anyway.
You need the flux capacitor and infusion.
Oh, that would be sweet. Just forget the DeLorean. I got a 56 Bel Air, baby.
Oh, so we're going to talk about displacement of time is one of the things that the aliens... What do we call... Well, I hate saying aliens. What do you want to call them?
You know, one of the common ones is usually they refer to them as like entities, but that sounds... Every time I hear the word entity, I always think of like a spirit.
Yeah.
As opposed to an actual physical being.
Bean. Let's just call them bean because that's what they are.
Beans?
Beans.
There's a can of beans. Got a
that and a can of beans.
Yeah, I got a can of beans that just showed up on the front porch. That's a can opener, by the way. All right, I'll see if I can see if I can wrap my head around that one. But well, I think when you have these beans come to
it
Earth,
it would be great if they could do it. But I think they are still in that observation situation.
I think I'm going to call them intelligences. That sounds better to me. Because they're probably smarter than I am. Maybe. Except for artistically. Try that one.
You're only good at doing drawings of freaking wheat fields.
No, I'm just...
They can't hold a pencil.
Yeah, I can't hold a pencil. Their fingers are too spindly.
I think that we're in the observation mode because our intelligence and our technology are starting to come to a point where
part of our technology may be able to actually outthink us. Does it have the moralistic capability of knowing what's right and wrong? No, it doesn't. That's where we run into a problem with AI. If you were able to somehow infuse a machine with a moral paradigm of some kind, I'm all for it. But with the way that Hollywood has so hugely influenced people's perception of AI coming out, it drives me up a wall. It's like AI is not necessarily bad, but it needs to be carefully watched over and looked upon before it actually gets out into the general populace. What people call AI on the computer to help you out, that's not really AI.
No, it's not.
But it got to be aware. It's just like if you're using Grammarly, it will rewrite a whole bunch of stupid stuff. I only use it because I am a terrible speller. I have a little bit of dyslexia, admittedly. But that's what I use it for.
How do we get to AI?
I'm just talking about it right now.
Which is, if you think about it, it could actually help with this alien problem.
It could. I think a lot of quantum computing, if there was a problem with deciphering a language that is unknown to us, put that AI to use, man. Do some number crunching. It would be kind of like
That.
Sure. Did you ever see the movie Arrival?
Yes.
With Amy Adams?
Yes.
The way that those guys talk was in those crazy ink blotches that they would spew out of their tentacle. And the hectopods, I think is what they called Abbott and Costello. I love those two guys. If you can call them guys. I'm just using it as a point of reference. But they were really interesting to me, the way that they communicated. And then the way that Amy Adams, who was able to start reading the way that these little swirls on each part of that blot that would show up on the window would leave something there. It wasn't like they could verbally communicate, but that was the best way they could do it.
Right.
I think that movie is a great example of human versus alien interaction.
Well, I have a thing about the telepathic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to know how to speak to us. Either they do it by feeling, right, in your brain, right? And saying you need to, like, not
not telling you, but it give you that feeling you need to do something and you do it.
It would,
because I don't think they can speak English.
No. I think that there's definitely an empathic way of dealing with stuff. And I think that you would get a feeling of whether or not they're being benign, or you might be able, because of that interaction taking place between you and the connection with said intelligence, would have nefarious things. You could feel that because there's a connection going on between you, your brain.
There's always,
according to a lot of abductees, maybe we should talk about that.
We're going to cut off right now. This is the end of three.
Three, yeah.
Yeah, three. And we'll be talking on the next one. So this is Paul.
And this is Alan.
And thanks for listening. We'll be back on part four.